Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
The Mian Team.
With guest co-hosts
MSLS.
D-A-C-O-L-E.
Raskolnikov.
Well, not every unique unit has to be an advantage, right? They're unique to a civilization for a reason.
They're
good.
Ah, okay. So, like, yeah, you can have a unique unit that cripples you as opposed to...
Welcome to the 78th episode of Polycast. I am Imran Siddiqui, and joined by Daniel Quick.
You're back.
Makalua.
You are so out of practice.
Raskolnikov.
Hi there.
Michael Lucas Smith.
Hi.
Daniel Cole, known as Doc Cole.
So it's usually better than this, right?
That might be one of the best opening lines from a guest ever. That might even be the episode title right off the bat. I don't know. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to beat that. The Mian Team is not able to join us today because Imran is wearing his Mian Team repellent.
Oh.
Come on, Imran. I told you not to wear that.
I had no choice.
I'm a little confused by this two Daniel thing. I don't know if I can handle that.
One's Canadian, one's not.
Daniel is just such a great name.
I can always call him Canadan.
Canadan.
Better unit movement and military strategy, and what Civilization 5 will be in the research lab. Born talk was about IH winning, it's so boring, too many financial empires in C4, and liberating cities as colony, and the Senate, very small island start.
Come on into the research lab, where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
Better unit movement and military strategy. Ramses, who's been dead for several thousand years, posted on the forum saying, a few days ago someone gave me the idea that all units should act to some extent like air units do now. And actually, I think this is a pretty good idea because, well, I guess we'll get into it, but he goes, all ground and naval military units have lots of movement points each turn. They can cross a large continent in a few years if they want. However, this raw movement power is impeded by several things, two main obstacles being the fog of war and enemy patrol zones. Units cannot enter tiles obscured by fog of war. In order to lift the fog, you must send units within a range of dark tiles and select the patrol command. So this is kind of interesting. It means you sort of have to push back your borders as you go. You can't just sort of rush out to nowhere.
I just don't know how that would work. I would have to play it to see how that would work.
Oh, that's a cop-out answer. I'd have to play it to see how it works. Everybody says that.
It seems like it would be bad from just reading it. It seems like that would not work. I agree with some of the people who responded that it would be more realistic because, yeah, it shouldn't take me 100 years to walk across my continent. It should take me a while, but 100 years
yeah.
Is a bit much.
Well, I have a different problem with the timescales that I had a chat with the Mian Team, who isn't on the podcast at the moment, about that particular thing about timescales, and we decided that the game actually got it wrong. It measures the game in terms of turns instead of years, gets it all back to front. When you get to the modern age, you can move much faster, and time is measured much shorter, but it's still wrong. Like, you can move around the whole world in only 6 months or something like that compared to the Stone Age. And when it comes to war and the AI's interpretation of diplomacy, it measures it in terms of turns. So when they get pissed off at you, they get pissed off at you for 1,000 years, and then in the later game, they get pissed off at you for a couple of months. I kind of like the idea because if you want to kind of pen someone in, you have to eat away at their army as you're attacking, and it reduces their territory, their control. It's sort of like the cultural borders wouldn't be controlled by the city radius. It'd be controlled by where you've got your units. And inside that area, you've got free reign, right? You actually have control of everything. I don't know how it would work in the modern age. As soon as you get satellites, what does that mean for the rule?
It's out the window. There is no fog of war.
Yeah, I mean, you can move anywhere you want in one turn, right? According to these rules. It doesn't scale.
Yeah, that's the one problem.
The return to Civilization V, A Whole New Civ, is a topic that came up a few episodes ago. The idea here is that we turn to our guests who give us what they would like to see in Civilization V. But the person who started this thread, Kamikaze, prefaces it that among the Civ community, there seems to be a widespread desire for the next Civ to be different from all previous Civ games.
The main thing I like to see is an improvement over the AI to all decrease the bonus as the levels increase. So, for instance, I like better automation. Most players could keep on micromanaging, can be interesting, and some others who aren't interested in micromanagement could enjoy a bit of automation.
The only automation that I do is improving trade network once railroads come into being. Any of the other automation parts, I find that there's definitely no meeting of the minds between myself and my workers. They have no idea what it is I want them to do. And until that point, I save myself time by managing them manually.
Yeah.
No, not every turn, of course. It's not really an automation, but I can tell them to go to this particular tile and then build this improvement. But then when that's done, I'm going to give them the next order because that's all they seem to be able to handle.
Yeah.
Actually, on that particular point, I think they've got the automation back to front. It would be better if you could go to a particular square and say, I want this to happen to this square, and I don't care when it happens because I'm not telling a worker to do it. I just want it to happen eventually. And that way, if you've got something immediate you want to do, you tell a worker to do it. Otherwise, you map out what you want on the land and let them do that in time.
Yes, on the thread posted that like kind of program for the particular worker, so you could change this list and edit it to fulfill your needs.
Okay, so have, like, you go here and you build this particular improvement, and then after you're done that, then go to this tile and do that particular improvement?
Yeah, and you could, as Michael said, change the priority if something happened and need to rework the list. But the worker eventually come back to its previous task.
Yep, I agree.
I don't know. I don't use automation much at all. Just because I'm very much I want to know what, have control over everything that is happening. Now, of course, this ticks people off when I play them on multiplayer because, well, I'm not fast at all.
I do all of my worker stuff manually, pretty much the entire game now. But I think if I could tell the workers what I wanted to do on different squares, then it would take me one or two turns to map everything out, and then I could just move workers to do the high priority things, and I wouldn't care about the rest anymore. It's just that on automated mode right now, they go and do stupid things.
Yes, I think it's the problem for workers. It could be nice, even if people the choice to micromanage, it could be nice to have an alternative to management of everything.
I mean, I don't even use automation with the people inside my city, which tiles they're working. I go through pretty much each city and change my tiles. The people are working almost every other turn.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Which really slows me down. I use no automation at all. To me, it makes it a real-time strategy game if you play it with automation. And that's just not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, but sometimes you can have so many cities that you have to automate some things. Or
Yeah, no. Or your turns take 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which mine sometimes do.
So one thing Rusty Edge said, hexes. I would actually not do hexes. I would say that get rid of the grid and hexes and stuff completely. Units still have a maximum amount of movement they can do, and they have a radius of influence. And that makes it a much more interesting game because you put an archer up on the top of a hill, and their radius of influence is going to flow down that hill. But it would still be a strategy game because it's not like you can just keep moving units around. They've got a distance they can travel.
Well, how would you measure the distance if you don't do it on hexes?
What do you mean? It's easy.
You just measure it based on, like, you can go this many inches on the screen, or?
Well, it's a map of the world, so yeah, you've got proper distance.
I'm not sure because I don't program, but I think there might be programming problems with that.
No, there aren't.
Then why do they always do hexes?
Well, the hexes is more of a board game thing. If you have squares, then moving diagonally is faster than moving up and down. But if you've got hexes, then it's equidistant no matter which direction you move. That's why you see people in Civilization will build a lattice of diagonal roads instead of left up and down so that they can get their roading faster and move around faster. You cover more ground by going diagonal in Civilization, which is why he's suggesting hexes, as many board games have done, to avoid that hack. Whereas I would just say, no, just get rid of the squares completely and allow the attributes of the land to stand out for themselves.
I know when we did episode 50 and we interviewed Sid Meier, I know that question came up.
I think I remember he said something along the lines of, hexes are for people who are really into board games and it would alienate new people coming to the game. Because hexes are kind of alienating.
It has that uber nerd thing going for it.
It really does. And I think the answer is just get rid of this idea of your unit is in this exact spot. And if you've got like anti-air things stuck up on the top of a cliffside, right, you want it to have a radius of defense, maybe even directional, but let's not go there. That would be much cooler than having it in a square and having to have a unit fly over it.
Civ 5 should not be Civ 5. Civ 5 should be Alpha Centauri 2.
Damn, he took my answer.
We need a new Alpha Centauri game. I'm tired of playing through history to modern times. I want to play through past modern times. And I want to do it with the same story that Alpha Centauri had. Because what made Alpha Centauri good is it was a role-playing, turn-based strategy game. Actually, depending on who you played, I mean, at least I played the game differently because of, oh no, believers would never go study this, or Yang would never make peace with this person.
The problem with Alpha Centauri, and I think I speak for most people who don't like Alpha Centauri but love Civilization, me included, is that I just can't get into the Alquator of the Torah trap being the Quantsevor over in the Semaphore. Right? It's a fantasy, and they just keep making up all these words, and you're meant to follow them all?
No, but see, it's not. It's all, if you look at it, all the science is things that are scientifically possible, and it's the philosophy and the science and all that that make it very good. But I can understand that his civilization is for people who like history, Alpha Centauri is for people who like more philosophy and science fiction more.
Well, I would like to see the science fiction technology available on Earth after 2050. Some of the things that you could predict might happen could have a very interesting impact. So we get to see what would happen to Earth if history were different. And then we can say, and what would happen to Earth if some of these predictions turn out to be true? I don't see why we couldn't do that in Civilization. And you could make it an option, turn it on and off, to have future tech instead of just future tech 1, future tech 2, actually use genetics to have genetically modified food and have events around that and bioengineered people for greater population, better health, all that kind of stuff.
I think that would be very interesting. They tried that a little bit on Next War, and I have to say that was fun. There's nothing like playing Civ and having big, huge mechs walking around the map.
I know, but I would like it to be more seamless with the game. You start out in the Stone Age and you end up in that point, right?
Well, what do you do then with the getting to Alpha Centauri victory?
That's pointless.
I love that victory. What I really would like to see is somehow that you could play Civilization, get to where you're at Alpha Centauri, and then you start playing Alpha Centauri. I think that would be very awesome. Probably will never happen, but I think that would be awesome. If we're going to stick with Civilization 5, I've always thought that what would be interesting, and this is, they may not want to do it because it might be too much like that, and it would significantly make the game more complicated. But what we have now is we really don't have a real model for warfare. We don't have things like morale, things like land have an effect on warfare. What would be nice is if there was somehow where, okay, you want to attack this, well, you can actually go in now and you see units and you can move the units around, not on the way we do it now, but you go to like a 3D level map, kind of like a Total War thing, kind of like what they have there, but in Civilization. You have to worry about morale, you have to worry about land, you can give, people can hide behind hills, that sort of thing.
Yeah, actually, the morale thing's interesting because after a while you get war weariness and everybody gets upset, but it doesn't affect the way your troops fight. And on the flip side, when you're winning, you get no advantage. So, you know, it's sort of like the Rome effect. When the troops are out there winning and conquering, everybody back in Rome was just loving it.
Agreed.
Yes, when you're winning, you get no effect on morale. I mean, you are getting other benefit, except for the occasional random event where your warriors have been winning and you get a one-time, one-off sort of little, oh, that was just kind of a nice acknowledgement, but then you forget about it. It has no lasting effect, and then there are people like the main team who do not like random events, and they would never even see that.
I think, though, a part of it is Sid doesn't like war too much, so he was trying to make a game that was more than a war game. So I don't know if he will ever do that, but I think that would be fun.
I wouldn't go so far as to say Sid doesn't like war. I don't want to say Sid likes war either.
I don't know. I think he's a peacenik. I think that's why he put the other...
Sid's a hippie.
Not a hippie. And not being a hippie is a bad thing. Or a peacenik is a bad thing. I'm a peacenik as well, in real life. But when I play a computer game, I don't go for cultural victory. I don't play on Prince because I have to try and go for a cultural or some other victory there. I can't conquer the world. But having a more kind of a total war aspect where when you can go to war, you actually have a mini war game inside Civilization. But I still want Alpha Centauri 2, damn it. If I'm playing as the United States, I don't want to be able to choose communism. I don't want to be able to choose state property because it would be outside of what the United States would do. Just by the same token, if I'm playing Stalin, I don't want to be able to choose capitalism. And then we have, I'm going to play the game more like the leader that I am playing as.
Well, that doesn't make sense because Russia's capitalist now.
Well, yeah, but they're no longer led by Stalin.
Yeah, but you don't change the actual leader in civilization.
Well, maybe that would be kind of cool too, actually, then.
Actually, that would be kind of cool. If you were controlling the civilization and you had a leader who came and went as the game progressed.
We have one leader from the dawn of time to 2050, okay? How does he survive?
Through clones.
It's clones, oh, okay.
Yeah, he's from the future.
It's not to the same degree of role-playing at all, but there are some elements in the Galactic Civilization series, including, for instance, Daniel, you mentioned, you know, being a particular leader and not being able to get to every single type of technology, and in fact having a bit of their own technology tree, and you can get that in Galactic Civilizations to some degree. But of course we know that the real reason we have not seen an Alpha Centauri 2 is Electronic Arts, because everything is Electronic Arts' problem.
Yeah, I do know this, but...
It was an idea I think I've talked to people offline about before, is the idea of swapping the techs around. Instead of researching a tech to be able to use it, as soon as you are able to have that tech accessible in the tech tree, you can start doing it, and by doing it, you perfect it. And then there's a level of perfection. When you reach that, you unlock the next techs, but you can keep doing that tech beyond having it unlock the next techs to get unique units from it. So for example, when you get up to iron, you can start building swordsmen, but they're really crappy. And the more you do it, the better the swordsmen get until you got full strength swordsmen. And then you can keep investing in iron to perfect iron, and you can end up with something like the samurai if you're Japanese. And you do that for all the techs. I think it makes more sense because there's always this question of, well, I know what's coming up in the tech tree. That doesn't really make sense because you have to invent things. Whereas really it's, I know everything that's coming up in the tech tree. What I need to do is teach my civilization how to do it right.
And if you had related things, maybe if you kept investing in horseback riding, that could give you a bonus to when you get the...
Do knights.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for this idea, especially since I brought it up.
My idea is more awesome than yours.
To go back to Alpha Centauri... One of the things that Alpha Centauri had was blind tech research.
Would you quit reading my mind?
They divided the techs into, like, expansion and combat or research, and you could put a certain amount of percentage in one of these two things. So you didn't have control over what you researched to the same extent. It was more like what it is in real life of, okay, I want to research something that is going to help me grow. Okay, so let me put my resources in that. And you might get a tech that would help you grow. Or, I want to put all my money in basic research. Okay, then you'll get something that's on the basic research side of the tech.
This is slightly different.
Yes, it is. Yours is slightly different.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you've got mathematics and you have the ability to build catapults, it encourages the player to actually build catapults to perfect that. Or if they don't care, they don't do it, right? They just do other mathematical type things like building bridges. I think the tech tree would look a little bit different if you did it that way, because every technology would have a real implication in the game. Whereas right now we have a bunch of technologies that are sort of stepping stones that don't do anything most of the time. What you see now is some people like the me and team will skip over lots of technologies to jump ahead and then barter for that technology. But what my suggestion forces you to do is to actually utilize that technology to move on. So you wouldn't be able to use that strategy anymore. And maybe he wouldn't like that, but he's not on the podcast right now, so he can't say so.
I think that was one of the things they changed, though, was one of the ideas, right? Skip around text and get the text in different ways.
Yeah, you can do that with this technique, too. You just, like, do it poorly, right? You build one catapult, and you never actually get good at that. So if somebody attacks you and you don't have catapults to defend, then tough luck. There's definitely advantages in investing time into really mastering technologies.
Yeah, like, how good is your steel going to be if you've only ever made crap iron?
Right, and when you finally get around to building ships, you're really going to have to invest in time to actually get that right now versus a nation that always invested in steel.
It would necessitate you, as you said, not just building one catapult, but a number of catapults. So then it would be building them over a period of time, and then would, say, actually using those in battle improve your chances, because now you've seen how it actually works.
Yeah, stuff like that. Absolutely, yeah. And that's where you get these people say, I want more unique units. Every nation could have a unique unit for absolutely everything. It doesn't necessarily have to have a name, maybe just a little ribbon that the units get because they're a special trebuchet guard.
I can already think of people saying, well, then that forces people to go to war in order to have better units.
No, hang on a second. That's the same as it is in Civ 4. When you go to war, they get experience and they get upgrades. It's the same. Nothing's changed there.
Right, I'm just saying for those people that might say, well, then that forces Civ to be more of a warlike game than it already is.
I think there's only so much training you can do. You really have to actually fight to improve your units.
You can go pick on barbarians. There you go.
Well, yeah, exactly. Barbarians are free XP points. Seriously. A real-world example of this whole idea of you actually have to fight to actually get good troops. It's an example that's been abused throughout history, but World War II invasion of France, the French army and tanks were far superior to the invading ones. However, the tactics used were completely different. The French were using tanks as support for infantry, whereas the Germans were using the tanks as tanks. And that's entirely based on experience in the battlefield. If the French army had used tanks in warfare, they would have known very quickly that the way they were using them was outdated.
They were using them like they were still in the Napoleonic era?
Yeah, they were using them as escorts. So you had an infantry roaming around, you had a tank that was like a mobile howitzer. That's what they were using them for. And so you get these German tanks, 100 of them would roll in, surround the infantry, and the infantry's like, oh, well, we only have one tank, we're in trouble. But the actual tanks that the French had were far superior to the tanks that the Germans were rolling in. So if they had known about better tactics, i.e. they had war experience, that wouldn't have happened. I'm just drawing on, you know, does the game match real world versus gameplay? And in this case, they match up.
Kind of like what made the Roman legions better than other people's similar swordsman units is because they had a hell of a lot of practice.
They had a lot of experience, yeah. And it's actually one of the things that the game doesn't do right now is it doesn't feed back to your barracks, right? So if you've got troops that go out there and survive and win and they get experience, not only should they get experience, but all of the new units you're training up should learn from that as well. That's sort of like the Pentagon approach, where real-world battle scenarios feed back into your training, and therefore your units should start with more experience, which is, I think that's what my suggestion about tech would do.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums. Raskolnikov, which topic within Forum Talk would you like us to start with?
I don't know. Why not? I hate winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I have something to say on this topic. If he hates winning because it's so boring, try not winning.
Yeah, he does point out an interesting thing here. As soon as you get to the point where you are outtaking any of the AIs, your only options are keep outtaking them and eventually win that way, or slow down your tech and get ridiculously large amounts of money.
Well, here's the thing. He's a Monarch player, and he crushes everything, but then he tries Emperor, and he feels he's so far behind. And it's like,
Yeah, the levels are a bit unstaggered like that. He's right. I was never going to get past Prince until I was taught the secrets of how to do that, and now I can win at Deity. So it really is pretty daunting, and unless you have the impetus to go and read all the forums, or you are lucky enough to play with someone like the Mian team, you're never going to get past that hump, because the game just jumps in difficulty too fast.
I understand that when by the time you get to about the middle of the game, okay, if you've done it right, then yeah, you're pretty much going to win one way or another. But still, it's interesting to try and win different ways.
Well, the AIs don't judge you on your actions. That's the problem. So if you get to the middle of the game and you're going to win and you're just a prick about it to everybody, the AIs never really set up any global union to say, we really hate this guy, we're going to gang up on him. The gameplay doesn't force you to play every aspect of the game until you get past Emperor.
Yeah, but I think the problem of the guy is to the middle of two levels, but I don't think the game can be changed so it doesn't happen. It has to happen when you play too much one level, then you jump and you have an adaptation period.
Yeah, I would like to see the AI programmers make the AI play to your level, so always tries to keep up with you.
Yeah.
So they can play the perfect game, but they tone themselves down based on how you're playing at that time. I like the idea of variable levels that adapt to how you're playing. Because that way, if you go to war with them and they kick your ass, it can back off and lower the level of combat, but keep the level of diplomacy and trade high and have different levels of interactivity that way.
I don't know how it can be made so the AI has a good interpretation of what is going on, if he is losing or not, but it's a good idea, I think, yeah.
If the AI was more active on doing what, on reacting to what you did, I agree. I think that would be interesting.
And reacting what to the other AIs do as well. It could be very interesting. Right now, the whole world diplomacy whispering behind each other's backs are, I think that guy's going to try and kill me. Do you want to go and kill him? That's it. That's the whole thing. There's no scuttlebutt at all. There's no reason to have an international conspiracy against one particular nation. I mean, civics are a bonus, not a negative. Like, if somebody becomes communist, you don't become negative because you're not communist. You get a bonus if you like communism. It's like, that's just wrong.
Yeah, you'd expect the ones that have democracy and things like that to go, ew, communists.
Yeah, it should be a with us or against us sort of thing, and all the non-communist nations should really rally together saying, oh, we hate them. And all the communist nations should rally together and say, well, we hate them. It's like religion. It should be like religion.
What I try to do is, if one difficulty level is a little bit too easy and the other is too hard, it is by no means a perfect measure, but I turn on aggressive AI.
Yeah, yeah. Or just play with other settings, but you can do a lot of different things to modify the level, yeah.
I like some of the suggestions. I think in an earlier episode, maybe not even this year, but last year, someone complained, for instance, that they could not vassalize themselves to an AI in the game.
Yeah.
Joggy said, you know, I tried to fix this issue that this person raised in this third Virtual Alex by changing sides in the end game. So save a world builder file, then reloading and choosing a different civ. So one experiment I did was to switch over to one of my vassals and play the end game as a vassal.
Hmm. Did it work?
He didn't tell us.
Oh, what?
I don't know if it was a voluntary vassal or it was a capitulation situation. I think if it was a capitulation situation, that would be even more interesting because you'd have to reach that 50% threshold of...
Well, no, you can win culturally.
Oh, don't even get me started on culture.
Sure, if you have a spreadsheet and you can plan this out, turns in advance, and you can win a cultural victory.
I like Patak's suggestion. Try multiplay. Kicks ass.
Yours.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Yours.
Yeah, yours. That's right.
Too many financial empires? I mean, I like playing them.
Yeah, I love playing them.
Bleakla complains that he's been trying to get back into Beyond the Sword, but continuing feeling frustrated facing sometimes two or more financial empires in every game. I feel the game was more balanced with the original and Warlords, but I don't want to give up cool things like corporations. I like being left alone on a continent, but if I share a landmass with many financial ones, the tech race is impossible with continual invasions, and I feel forced into a domination victory.
So what level is he playing here?
Don't think he discloses.
Yeah, he doesn't say difficulty level.
He says he's getting the Oracle, so he's not doing too badly.
Well, he says right here, I'm so sick of always attaining Confucianism. Well, turn on choose religions. There's one fix for you.
Yeah.
You don't want to be forced into a domination victory? Disable domination.
How do you get forced into a domination victory anyway? It's like, oh, well, now I have an army and I absolutely must keep fighting people.
Does the AI hold a stack of doom to your head and says, you must conquer me?
I can't make peace.
Ramses points out, so again, he starts thread and he responds to threads, even though being dead for thousands of years, as Michael pointed out. The leaders are more balanced, if anything, because where there used to be 19 unused trait combinations, there are now only 3. Not to mention there's added texts and wonders which allow for even more strategies than before. I don't know about the added texts and wonders necessarily, but the fact that there are only three unused trait combinations, there's a reason that they're unused trait combinations.
Because they're slightly overpowered.
Slightly overpowered!
People have said, and we've said this before to some people, not wanting to see particular AIs in the game, that you can hand-pick your own roster. And yes, that can be a bit tedious, so I suppose maybe you could, we're all about options here, maybe even have an option that you could check. No financial opponents.
It's worth noting that if you maintain the peace in your game, you can reap the benefits in trade. You get huge bonuses from trading overseas in peace and long-time trading. I've had cities that are pulling in five connections to my capital, and each one was getting me 6 gold per connection. So 30 gold just from trade and having peace.
I think the problem of Lika is he managed his troops very well, but not his peacemonging and...
And his economy, apparently.
Yeah, it sounds like he blamed the game for selecting too much financial sieves.
Well, possibly he doesn't know how to use the great people points in the cities, because if he believes the only way to get tech is with gold, then he must be missing that part of his game.
It sounds like it, yeah. He could do a bit better. Can you manage to compete in the tech race with financial ease, like with every other ease? It's not the trade that matters most.
I've seen some amazing city setups before. I saw this one game where every city got to about size 7, and this guy had about 50% more cities than I would ever build. There would be a square that gives you 6 food, and he would give that to one city to let it grow, then take it away and make sure that city has enough so it doesn't starve, and then he would share it around 3 cities and grow them sequentially in a loop. That's just awesome stuff. But the thing is that he had so many cities, put a library in each, specialized the cities to give them scientists, and his tech rate was just through the roof. And that's not financial at all, because he was focusing on food.
There are several paths to good taking in C4, but there is no only the cottage way. Or he's not forced to stay in the quest, but he should to improve his economy, basically.
Yeah.
Liberating cities as colony. Johnny 5000.
Yesterday I received a city as a condition of a peace treaty. Even though I didn't really want it, it was way out in BFE.
I thought, surely to gosh, they would have gladly given you a peace treaty without giving you one of their cities.
Well, you don't have to take the city.
Yeah, I was like, oh. After that, he wanted to liberate it and keep it as a vassal, but couldn't figure out how.
Well, if it's on another continent, you can do it. You just go to the list of cities, and down the bottom right-hand corner, there's a small button, which you'll never notice, that allows you to liberate.
Yeah.
And you click that, and you'll be able to liberate that city. But it has to be completely separate from you, which it sounds like it was in this case.
Really? The colonies thing, liberating as a colony? Most of the time, I'm agreeing with the people in the thread that it's not worth it. I mean, you could have avoided the problem in the first place by not taking the city, because it just was a financial suck for so long. I think in the end he said that he ended up giving the city to another civ, and then they were really happy. And I thought, well, you know, if that civ is, you think, might be a particular thorn in your side, and that's the city that you were given, you didn't want it anyway, and it's a financial suck, and it's going to take a lot of effort for it to be useful. It sounded like it was a pretty crappy city to begin with, so I don't think you'd be giving this other civ much of an advantage, and you get the diplomatic modifier for it. So it's another way to go about it.
The diplomatic modifier, which you will slowly whittle away over the rest of the game.
Yeah, well, take advantage of it while you've got it.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
The very small island start, although it's really not technically an island, in a way he ends up playing it because being blocked off by just the one tile, and it's a one tile peak.
I was going to say, if it's small islands, Dan should be familiar with that start.
The me and team could explain here, but he's not on. But I'm pretty sure the game counts that as a separate landmass anyway. Because you get trade bonuses between the cities. If you settle on the other side of that mountain, you'll get a foreign trade bonus and extra gold. It's very good. Yummy. It is actually an island as far as, you know, you may as well call it one.
It seems like that would be a very hard start, though, just because of the...
Oh, God, yeah.
Because, I mean, you'd have problems with expansion. You'd have issues with the money that it costs to maintain your cities, your maintenance.
You can compete in text by building the Great Lighthouse, but Yeah, it will be tough.
I find it funny, though, that in this episode we've talked about someone complaining about it being too easy. To that person, keep reloading until you get a bad start.
Yeah. Play from there.
Until you get a start like this, then tell me it's too easy.
Or even better, since the person posted their save from this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We can just direct this individual to this thread.
We're bringing people together.
Yes, we are.
So this thread, Bioelectric Clam, it's a quick speed, huge custom continents 3 map, Raging Barbarians, Prince difficulty with space and time victories disabled. Discovered animal husbandry and ironworking and dismayed to find that there are no resources outside of fish, rice, and clams. The peninsula is only one tile thick in most places, meaning no matter where I build my first city, it will be mostly water tiles. There are a few hills for mining, but no rivers, and the only forests are on the hills, so I have to chop them down if I want to use the mine, which hurts my city's health. Other than my capital, there isn't much room on the peninsula for a second or third city. I could squeeze in a few more, but they will almost stall water tiles again and have to share food resources with other cities to grow. There are larger islands to the east, and a continent lies to the west, but I have to build a fleet of ships to reach them, and I worry about maintenance costs. Well, you don't have to build a fleet of ships, not to start with. All you need is one galley. Get yourself a settler and get over there. And then continuing, I tried to play this map twice, but ended up quitting in disgust both times after other civilizations beat me to the Great Lighthouse and Temple of Artemis combination. Any advice or suggestions on how I should go about playing on this map?
Yeah, go and take those wonders off the AI.
Yeah, the Temple of Artemis I wouldn't be trying for. Maybe Great Lighthouse, but I'd be tempted to be working on expanding a little bit more.
You definitely don't need those, because it's the level of tech that you reach in early Middle Ages, and you could just spam those units and conquer whatever you want for a good while before you have to really batten down and defend and then catch up in tech. I think there's definitely a level in Civilization 4 where people are just so obsessed with having every tech and making sure they're not behind the AI in tech. And at some point they realize, hey, I don't have to be ahead in tech. I just have to have advantages, whatever those might be. Because you can always catch up in tech, or you can trade for the tech, or you can buy the tech, or you can destroy the civilization that has more tech than you so that no one has that tech.
Yeah, you don't need the most advanced units. You just need a large army and an army that can go in there and do damage to those units. And if a civilization is really advanced in technology, their army may not be very good. Or if it is good, perhaps you can find its vulnerabilities, because it's unlikely that all of their empire is protected equally. And you can do some damage and set them back.
Well, the other thing here is that you're forced to have a navy early on, which turns out to be a really big advantage, because your civilization is pretty much untouchable. You can go and attack somebody on the main continent without reprisal at this point. And once you do that, you've got your beachhead, and that becomes your new center of operations, and then you expand from there, and you're going to be set for life.
Yeah, so go into that mainland, scout out with a workboat or a galley what those islands are. Maybe those islands would also be of use, but the fact that you can see already, I don't think maintenance costs are going to be that big of an issue, but you definitely want to get onto the mainland. That's where you're going to have your best advantage for things that have already been stated. So, oh, and the thing about having to share food resources with other cities to grow, that in itself is not a problem.
That, in fact, at the higher levels, you would almost consider that an advantage, but you've got to know how to manage it.
Now, I usually end up with more food than if I have a city with, like, as he's got here, with, like, 4 or 5 food resources on it. It gets really quickly to the point where it's too large, and just happiness and health becomes a massive problem. So I would spread my food resources out more here if you could somehow.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have any trouble with growing your cities in this particular case. You can squeeze the cities in, give them one food resource each. Yeah, it's pretty good. I think he's put his capital down in a really bad spot.
I would agree. It's got 4 food resources. It's going to grow way too quickly.
Yeah, you want to kind of optimize the number of cities you can squeeze into this area, and everything's going to touch some food somehow.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659.
That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at the Polycast.
Or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. what are the best odds that you've lost to? At least 90, maybe even 97, 98. I'm sure we've all had an experience with this. And if you haven't had an experience with this, then you haven't played the game enough, and shame on you.
What?
I think I've lost a 99 unit.
Yeah, I think this sort of thing is interesting. It happened less in previous Civs where you had attack and defense. Because often, if you've got an attacking unit and you attack, you've got the element of surprise, you know, it's on your side sort of thing. And if you're the defending unit and you're not a defending unit, then you should get trampled, even if you're fortified and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's always a shock when you've got this army of berserker macemen attacking one spearman, and the spearman's damaged and he's not fortified, and you attack with 3 combat bonuses and you die. And it's like, what happened?
And on the same flip side is the mean team, and the thread points out. I've lost at 99.9% and won with less than 0.01%. While I haven't quite seen it go to that extreme.
Well, I think it should be like fortune favors the bold sort of thing. If you're the attacking guy, then you should be able to pull off this arsiness. But if you're the defender, then you should expect to get trampled from time to time.
I don't know. A spearman attacking a tank, I don't care how much surprise you have, you're going to get owned.
Well, I don't know about that. So, tanks have holes in them, and then the people inside, and you've got to look at everything.
No.
The spearman makes the one in a million throw.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have to throw it. He just has to stab it through the hole.
What tank is there a hole in it?
It depends on the era of tank. If you've got mobile infantry, not a chance. If you've got World War II first deli tanks, absolutely. You could definitely kill the driver with a spear.
No, I don't think they had holes.
Not through the armor, through the holes. They had lots of holes. So they could stick their machine guns out and shoot people. The combat odds thing is crazy like that. It really should be some sort of exponential system. So the likelihood of losing when your chances of winning are so high just basically shouldn't happen.
This was Polycast episode 78 with Daniel Cole.
Hi, Civ is not a real-time strategy game.
Daniel Quick.
Back again.
Imran Siddiqui.
All right, until next time. Maybe.
Michael Lucas Smith.
Now, I'm not a language expert, but I'm pretty sure this isn't French.
And Makalua.
What? Bye.
Makalua.
I had something wittier there, but it completely left my head.
And myself, Praskolnikov.
Well,
there.
I would then. Well, if you want.
And I want to do.
I don't enjoy it.
But I also don't use turn timer much at all either. I hate the turn timer.
Yeah, you're getting better with it because the people you often play with force you into it.
Yes, so, I know, Dan. You're just going to need to start playing quickly, I know.
Which I know to Michael hearing that statement might sound a bit.
That's just hilarious because Kenadan, the slow one.
Never, never, never play a game with me, okay? You would be reaching through your screen and strangling me.
I like it how when Mackie's microphone stops working and she doesn't say anything, she still gets paid.
When we disgust her so much that she just has to go and bang her head against the wall a few times before she comes back.
Or have to either answer the phone or pay the lawn mowing people or go to the little conqueror's room.
The little conqueror's room.
That could be an episode title, too.
That could. That's fantastic.
All right, I guess it's time for a new topic.
Whoa, hang on.
Hot topic.
Hang on there.
It went so well.
Hang on there, Daniel from America. That's not the way Polycast works. We've got at least another hour to talk about this topic before we move on.
I see.
Don't be in a rush here, you know. Uh-oh, it's all falling
what?
Apart.
Hello.
Yeah.
What was that?
Oh. Ah! Well, back.
We're all dying! Run!
I'm so scared.
Dan, don't hold me.
Whose hand is that? Oh, it's mine.
I'm leaving now before this gets really weird.
Really weird.
Yeah, I was going to say, before it gets really weird, even if it's not now, what?
Yeah.
Before it passes my weird threshold.
Record date?
September 19th, 2009.
Civilization 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword sound clips, copyright Take Two Interactive.
Copyright
2009.
Civilized Communication at civcom.net.